Hello.
What's up?
What's going on?
Hey. Hey, 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 hey.
Today on the podcast, we have Taylor Hansen, who's the singer of Hansen.
Well, they all sing.
Well, yeah.
He's, I think, the main singer.
Yeah.
My girlfriend called him the really hunky one.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. He's extremely hunky.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the first episode we've done with somebody that we didn't know.
Yeah. And we met over Zoom.
Zoom chat, yeah. But, yeah, I think kind of without knowing it, we've both kind of done a lot of the same things as a band. And you'll hear us kind of get into it. And I think if you're a fan of our band, hearing him talk is going to sound like one of us, because
yes.
we agree a lot on how to go about things, how we want to treat the fans, and how we want to make art and stuff. So, it was awesome to talk to him, and you know, kind of this weird thing where you know there's this band that I remember being a little kid and hearing Oombop, and wouldn't have ever thought that we'd be doing a podcast. So
yeah, it was a great talk. He's super nice guy and really thoughtful, and it felt like I was talking to a different version of you, you know.
Yeah.
So it was sure. It was really cool. Super nice person.
Yeah. So awesome. Well, we will get into that. And just before, here's a message from a sponsor.
No, cool, I mean, cool. We have lots of mutual friends, and really cool you guys do this. And
yeah,
obviously, I mean, for all of us right now, we're all spending a little more time sitting in front of a screen. So it made it easier as well to make it happen. But I think it's rad you guys are doing it. And we've always been really kind of pro just direct fan content creation, community cultivation. I mean, so I just think it's... cool to hear what you guys have in mind and to have a conversation.
For sure, yeah. You know, I was thinking before we were going to do this, and you know, there's always like a couple different paths in your career as a band where like you can go down one path or the other. And for us, after our second record, we were so sick of being on a major label and just wanting to rebel and make any album that we felt fit at the time. And we turned it into the label and they were like, absolutely not. We are not going to put this out. So we like fought for a year and a half, you know, to get the record out and heard to our fans. That was the moment where, you know, since then, that's like 10 or 11 years ago now, we've done everything, you know, completely independently. And it's just us and our manager that are, you know, doing everything. We've now put out 6 records on our own. And seems like you guys kind of had that same kind of thing happen where it's like, you can either continue to fight against the machine or take things into your own hands, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and truth is, I think it's awesome we're having this conversation because we absolutely experience very similar things. And I think like so many situations, not just for bands, but for people in life, and then also just especially I think in entrepreneurial endeavors, like where you're building things from ground up, which is what a band is. I mean, a band is basically you're a creative entrepreneur, right? You're building something, a startup. And you're judged really mostly by how you handle things when they start to fall apart or when they're hard, not when things are, I mean, when things are going great, or not even just when they're going great, but when they seem to be the path that was expected.
Yeah.
Those are not the times they're really tested. You're tested when things, you really have to call on your core beliefs and stick to those guns. And I think one of the cool things for us is oftentimes when you really go back to the question of what do I do in a situation of challenge, oftentimes it's not, I got to change what I do to solve this problem. It's really, I've got to do the things that got me here in the first place. You know, I mean, if you think about how did you ever get signed? How did you ever find a fan? How did you ever build an audience? Well, most of the time it was somebody, you know, people said no 65 million times, you know, and you said, well, okay, I'm going to go over here now. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have an audience because you followed your gut. And so when you can remember that, a lot of times people just feel like once they've gotten signed, once they've had some success, if things kind of go, you know, take a left turn or are different, they sort of implode. And for us, we, of course, I mean, have that same challenge and those questions, but if you look at it as just the next chapter, like the next time somebody's going to not sign you when you're a band, and every label that meant anything, and the label that ultimately signed us early on had already turned us down 3 times.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, we just went down like around the boardroom, like that guy said no. Oh, how about the next guy? That guy said no. So, and not to self-promote or anything, but if anybody was interested in that story for ours, we actually made a documentary called Strong Enough to Break.
Yeah. I watched it as awesome.
Similar to things that we went through. I was like, I don't know what episode it was or what part of it was, but you guys were talking all in a circle, talking to the record label about like, well, if you don't believe in this, like kind of like fuck you. And like, yeah. We're not gonna do this. And I was like, oh my God, we all sat in a circle and did the same exact thing. And I was just having like flashbacks, and it was,
you guys seen the I Am Trying to Break Your Heart, Wilco one? Yeah. It's like the, kind of all the same thing. And actually that documentary, like we were watching as we were making the album, that then that same thing happened to us.
The thing that's, you know, so now we, I don't know how many years officially it was, you were saying it's about 10. We started our label in 2003, and Wow. Now it's like, seemed like completely future at the time. You know, it seemed very like everything else that happened, like this was now the brave new world. And so now it's really wild because we have genuinely so much time behind us in the next chapter as an independent band, you know, sort of a major independent, right? You're not local independent, you're indie, but you're not, you know, you're global indie sort of, you know. But we've got so much experience in that road now. Like you guys, you know, have a long time as well. It's so interesting because you're able to see which things, not you're necessarily proved right on, but at least, you know, you're see whether your gut was way out in left field or whether your gut was a little closer to right or closer to where it was going. And then, you know, forced to sort of evaluate the impact of those decisions going forward. And, you know, there's so much of what we're doing now, which the whole industry is doing now, you know, essentially, you know, finding a record and licensing it to a label or licensing it to a marketing partner. And we were preaching that conversation in 2005 when we moved on to starting the label, and we did a tour of colleges, and our whole thing was basically, we're not unique. I mean, we are unique in the sense of it's great to have had success. There's few bands that get to have a fan base, and that's all fabulous and amazing and humbling, but ultimately, like, we're one of many bands that are dealing with the collision of a corporate system that really doesn't know what to do with itself, you know, and is super top heavy and is like about to just go, you know, because they got a bunch of guys in golden parachutes, you know, and they're trying to figure out how to make it as easy and turnkey as possible when that didn't build any of those things. So you need, we were saying to college students, guys, this is your moment. Like you can take this business over. You know, you can reclaim it. We can reclaim it, fans and artists. And then unfortunately, and some things that's actually happened, right? But in a lot of respects, we're in version 2.0, and we've kind of handed it over again, because Lior Cohen is, you know, running YouTube Music, Jimmy Iovine is running Apple Music, you know, like the powers that be are running the powers that be, but the audience does, like you guys are doing, and we've done, the connection between the audience, for those that have cultivated that, you really truly can build something that is yours.
Yeah.
If you so choose to, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, was it a little bit of a challenge, at first to adjust to kind of having to just be in your own cocoon as a band, where it's like, all right, it's time to quit caring if we have a song on the radio. It's time to quit comparing ourselves to other bands. And, you know, as bands, I feel like one of the biggest reasons that other bands just decide to end way too early is because they're just comparing themselves to success that other people are having in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, so it's this constant feeling like you're not doing enough. And if you're not having the success of some other artists, then you just shouldn't do it. When if you have an audience that cares about what you're doing and is interested, you can make this last. And, you know, obviously when we started compared to when you guys, the climate of record sales was way different. But, you know, like our thing was always like, we would rather sell 50,000 records 10 times rather than 500,000 records once, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And was it hard to adjust from kind of metrics and the charts and things to then just thinking about, hey, how can we make the best album for our fans? How can we put on the best show for our fans?
Yeah, I mean, but the way I'd see it is it's a continual process. But, you know, for one, the way we kind of win at what you're describing is it's sort of a redefinition of success.
Yep.
And because it's not to say, look, you guys, we all know, everybody would love, you still have in your heart, you want to reach as many people as possible with music. I mean, you don't write a song for six people. You write a song because you believe it's great and you're proud of it and you want to share it. But, and so you're always hoping you reach as many people, but there's a difference between who you are as an artist and what you actually go out to do and what you build your sort of, your model on and your real sense of expectation. And you go, look, this might happen or this might happen, but our core thing we know we need to have happen is to reach these people. And so it was hard, and it is hard continually to sort of take that on, that responsibility on further and say, you know what, like our first example on that first record was, of course we want to have a, you know, top 40 single, in the, you know, in a perfect world, but you know, that literally takes forcing the muscle of, you know, essentially pay to play. I mean, you're going to radio and people that don't work in the industry don't understand. It's essentially, it's not that it's literally like the old days of here's cocaine and here's $100,000 in cash. It's some of that, but it's also literally just having every guy on staff that pushes your song to the front of the line and pushes Beyonce out or whoever else. And so, you know, you're not going to be able to win that battle at some level unless you've got a massive bank account thrown behind you. But we just said, look, this is about, let's say, what's the indie chart look like? Could we be top 10 indie? Could we be top 10, you know, what's our touring base? And I don't know if the other thing we began really focusing more on, it was our internal fan club and people actually that are registered to be members, you know, that are involved in what you do all the time. And began talking about, you know, being in the Hanson business, not as much just quote unquote music business, but the business of your brand, your identity, your relationship with people. But that's painful. I mean, and I think it's not just painful because it's like, it's not about settling for something that you're not shooting for the stars. It's about taking a hard look and also building an ecosystem around yourself and not passing blame, you know, not passing like, oh, that bad A&R guy, he never picked my song. It would have worked if, you know, it's like saying, nope, nobody to blame but me. We hired that guy and it didn't happen. Or we didn't hire that person, you know? You know what I'm saying? Like that shift. But I mean, when did you guys officially break out? When was your first record?
2008.
So yeah, so 2008, I mean, like, you, in a way, you guys were post-apocalyptic, the initial apocalypse, but you know, it's like, there is this opportunity now to actually, you know, imbue in artists. Look, you are like, you are the master keeper, you know, here, like, you are the keeper of your content. Like, everybody's got to come to you. Like, mm-hmm. And so I think the best thing now is training young artists to realize, like, their copyright and their intellectual property is valuable, you know?
Yep.
Like, it's because everyone else, it doesn't matter how much, you know, distribution whoever has, like, they can't create something that makes an emotional connection in a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe some people can.
Well, the computers might be figuring it out right now.
Okay, so let's see. Yeah, that's not true. Yeah, the Mark Zuckerberg is definitely working on an emotional connection generating algorithm.
Yeah, but if you've seen his eyes, he has no emotional connection.
Yeah, well, that's why he's working on an algorithm. What is this thing, relationship?
For sure.
I think we just got permanent spyware put on our.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Facebook is.
They're also in this chat.
They yes.
Hi.
Hi guys. Oh man. Yeah. It's I think for us, you know, we really kind of went through these phases where at first when we put out our first record independently, it was like, well, fuck you. We're going to go the complete opposite. We're going to make a record that anybody at a record label would hate. And we're just going to do whatever we want, you know. And then over time, you kind of come back to your senses a bit and like come back in the middle and just want to make the best album possible that your fans are going to like, that the band's going to be really, really happy with. And I think it's also what younger bands, and obviously you've been through this way more than us, having, you know, began way before us, but there's just so many ups and downs in this thing where, you know, I read a Neil Young quote at like the perfect time for our band where, you know, he said, sometimes I'm in arenas, sometimes I'm in clubs, sometimes I'm in theaters, but you just keep going and it's going to continue to just go up and down. And that's been such a thing that, you know, bands have kind of come to us that will take on tour, and, you know, they're on their second or third record, and for the first time things aren't just going up, it's like beginning to come down to find this kind of even ground where things are going to be, and being content with that, but then at the same time still having the fire to take on the world. And, you know, it's took us a while, probably until about like 4 or 5 years ago, to be in this place where you can do both. You can be grateful and happy for your audience and build this community. And when you go make your next record, have this fire to think that it's possible that you make the biggest album of all time.
Agree. Totally. So one of the things I would say, and to spark the conversation, and I could go on the subject forever because we love it so much. As you guys do. One of the tricks with this, and I think one of the secret weapons that is really hard as an artist, but you can, I feel blessed to have figured this out for myself early on, is nobody can take away the success of creation from you, right? And as much as I almost wish it wasn't true, I would do all this for nothing, you know? You know what I mean? I would do, if you left me, I mean, that's what artists, true artists would do it. We will do it for nothing. It's not about 10,000 people. No, you want to be in front of 10,000. You want to be in front of a million, but you want people to know it. You want it to matter. But both the incredible gift and the curse is we'd all do it for free, you know, and it's figuring out how to not tell those that will take advantage of you that that's true, you know, and at the same time, it's this incredible, like, you cannot kill me because we're not doing this. You could steal every song I've ever recorded. And you know what? I'm going to write another one tomorrow. You know what? You could stop me in my tracks and I can still walk on stage and share and connect with people. And I think redefining success is that reality that you have an unbeatable superpower as a creator of anything, as an idea person, as an inventor, that you can never, that can never be taken from you. So that coming of age is almost what you're talking about, like accepting, almost just like coming into life as a, you know, through the initial honeymoon period and being like, yeah, I mean, let's be real. Like, there's highs and lows. Yeah. It's gonna plateau, you know, but you know what? That was true. That's true at every season.
Yeah.
You know, it's true at every season, like that you have your ups and downs, and other things are more satisfying than ever. Like, once you've got some history too, once you've got some backdrop, you're like, man, that means a lot more now. Like, that song means so much more today and than it ever did. And that's satisfaction that you can only get from time, basically. Oh, you can only get from history.
No, I mean, you put that perfectly. That was such a, 'cause exactly right. It's, you can't ever, there's no faking that feeling of a song being done or the part that made that song specifically the thing that shook your bones, the part that you'll always, every time that happens, you'll always feel it. And there's no taking that away. It doesn't, yeah, like you said, no, even if no one listened and you are sitting in front of your computer hearing it, you're still going to feel that same exact way.
But so what, no, you're right. What we're basically saying is we're all narcissists. And so
I do.
That was amazing.
I'm perfect.
But they're like, really is this kind of like when you're at 10 PM and you've been working on a song all day and you're hearing it back for the first time and it feels like a complete thought, and there's just no better feeling in the world than hearing this idea that came from something recorded on a voice memo, you know, and you're hearing it and it feels like, wow, this is better than I could have ever imagined.
Especially unbeatable. After at like 8 p.m. and you stopped for dinner and you hated it at that point. This is totally awful. This is a horrible song. And then you listen back and go, oh, we did this?
Yeah. Taco Tuesday, man, this sounds so much better now. I rocked my tacos and, you know, got a little brain power. It was, yeah, the power of the dinner break is an incredible thing. Yeah.
Or a glass of wine helps too. Yeah.
Yes.
Are you guys now, are you recording records completely on your own with just the three of you guys? Or are you guys still bringing in producers for certain things? Or
yeah, we've never turned away from, I mean, being independent for us has really been about maintaining the course musically, not like now we're free, we're going to be this other thing. It was more about, no, we've basically always been, I mean, we were, again, grateful and lucky to have some breakout success. But the truth is, like, we've never really been on trend with anybody. And it's kind of, we're just kind of a weird three harmony guys that listen to soul music, white guys from Tulsa, Oklahoma, that idolized Chuck Berry and Otis Redding, but we're a garage band. I mean, it's just, what is it? You know, I don't even, category of one, you know, for better or for worse. So we've never shied away from producers as far as collaborators, but usually everybody we work with has to accept the reality that we're sort of forever co-producers because we're just too opinionated. You know, and so even when you find somebody, like we've had, you know, great producers, great engineers, you have a lot, we work a lot with sort of very hands-on engineers that we have great relationships with. And I swear I can't get my phone and computer unlinked to not text.
I had that same problem.
Like, turn off. Everyone's talking to each other. But producers and engineers, I mean, it's definitely different seasons, different times. One of the things that we really kind of identified, you know, two or three albums back, was really how effective and helpful it is to really do that basic tracking in an isolated space, you know, residential studios, you know, places where you really, phones don't work, and you focus on those first really foundational weeks. and the power of pre-production, I mean, you know, of actually doing arrangements and really laying out structure. I mean, we've done it every different way. We've done insane all layered over dub driven albums. We've, you know, done stuff with sequence, you know, production, and we've done stuff completely off the floor, zero over dub. I mean, almost live, completely live. Vocals are always, you know, always tricky on that level. But right now we're working on, you know, we've had a sort of a very interesting season in the last few years where we made a record, essentially never stopped until 2014, shortly end of 2014. We said, you know what, let's slow the cycle down and let's not go straight into the next album cycle. And sort of since then, you know, done this symphony project where we did a big collaboration with orchestras and you know, totally, I would say anybody that decides to do that, call me first. it's awesome, but also, you know, very challenging, hugely satisfying. We just did that and went through a tour with symphonies. You did these arrangements, different symphony in every city. It's amazing that it happened and worked. Did an anniversary project, did several different deals, and now we're really preparing for the next full-length record out that we put out, you know, will be the first full-length record since 2013, which is really... Oh, wow. Because we've basically done, like, we've never stopped music, you know, putting things out and shows, but we really said, let's change the dynamic. And we began doing other things. But one of the things that's made that work is we do a fan club EP just for the members that are part of our membership every year. You know, so no matter what's happening, it's like there's always at least 5 songs every year that we record and write and share to this membership group. And so, like, that's like 75 songs over the last 20 years. Like, this tomorrow is a 20th anniversary of that group, that fan club thing.
Oh, cool.
So, so that stuff, I mean, always being creative and challenging and honestly writing and collaborating. I love getting in the room with other creative people and walking out with something unexpected.
The fan club EPs, you guys like theme them, right? So it's like you'll come up with a big idea and you'll stick to that, and the whole EP will be themed around that idea, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like the first one we did,
doing that for so many years, and then I read that, I was like, fuck.
Well, no, but you guys do it better. I mean, do it, you know, and I mean, we're in the conversation. The big idea drives, I know for me, like, that really gets me fired up. Like, oh my God, what if? But then at the end of the day, if the big idea takes you into music that's not so good, like, throw the idea out and just do something really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, if it produces something exciting, then awesome. But if it's like you're only writing the idea and then you look at it and you realize you're just writing an algorithm that is cool to you that no one else cares about.
Yeah.
But that being said, like, example, the first one we did, originally we would just collect songs that maybe were B-sides or songs that we wrote on the road or songs that were in between. And we really changed to about 10 years ago to this style because it was like, let's make this exciting for us the same way any record would be. Mm-hmm. And we did a thing called Facing the Blank Page where we, you know, before live streaming was quite as prevalent as we're all grateful it is now. We turned on a live camera and did writing and recording, and didn't have any songs, you know, basically, hey, good morning. Well, and it was testing, yeah. You know, it turned out, and actually, I'm hoping to do something similar during this craziness, this season right now, where we're finally, you can, like, okay, check the box. Let's just share and create. We did another one we called No Sleep for Bandidos, and we only worked at night, and it was also interesting.
I would love to do that.
We literally just showed up in the evenings and worked through the night. I thought it was great because I'm very much a night owl, but by about the fifth or sixth day, you know, it was, people were testy, you know, I mean, it was interesting. And I think, you know, I just think anything that puts you in a place of challenging yourself, is good. And for fans, I think, you know, as a fan of other bands, like, there is definitely something to letting people in, you know, and sharing something that is, you know, unique and being vulnerable. and celebrating the fact that that people are a part of something that's not just like a 3-minute song, but they feel connected to each other and to you, hopefully. So that's been a cool part of the EPs, and we're actually about to do the one for this year, which has been fairly sidetracked by our global pandemic that we're experiencing. I mean,
maybe this one you'll have to stay in separate houses and send each other.
I mean, it's actually, we'll probably be making an EP just like this. I like this.
Yeah.
Well, we're in the process of starting to write our next one, and we're like, how are we going to do this? And so I think later today we're going to try and do one of these and try and see if it goes anywhere.
Well, I mean, in all seriousness, creativity is what we have now, you know, to figure out. I've been fairly, a lot of people doing cool streams and stuff like that. And I haven't really done much, but I'm going to be doing some stuff later this week. And, you know, the idea that we can do what we're doing right now and connecting is so nuts.
No, it's so insane.
It's such future, you know, it's futuristic, you know, things that you would talk about. Like, one day we'll call each other on video camera, and then we'll look at our watches and it'll have a call, and we'll like Dick Tracy it. And, you know, and it's like, wait, that just happened. My daughter just, you know, said, you know, hey Siri. And then she like ordered something from Amazon and she's 9, you know, like, what's happening?
Yeah, that's wild.
So we're all living in the future.
Speaking of kids, so I just had my first baby 1 month ago, actually. Thank you. I was curious on how you guys adapted to that part in your career, because I'm the first one to take the plunge into that, you know, and it's something that we're like just now kind of figuring out. Do we divide the tours in half and put a break in the middle or whatever? Or was it a process to adjust for you guys?
You know, I can't say that there's some way that it works. I mean, it goes back to definitely your relationship with your partner. I mean, with your wife or your spouse. You know, I was super young and we just tried to not miss a beat. And we just were like, oh, that's not a baby, you know? Like my wife and I, you know, we were the first to have kids on the road. And so our oldest, you know, we just tried to be truthful, we just kind of started with, let's act as if this is not, you know, we're not going to change our life. We're just going to put him on our, you know, back and take him on the road. And so my, you know, I was the only one married, fairly quickly. The other guys were married. But so I think our initial, you know, challenge was really just kind of making sure to look out for each other. And I think, you know, best advice I would suggest on that is really just instilling confidence in your partner that, you know, that they, you know, that you are there, that you're equally prioritizing who you are, what you do with your family. And I should say equal, that shows how obsessed I am with what I do. You know, the truth is the first marriage is a band, you know, and you know, that just having that relationship of trust, where you have to give each other a lot of trust to maintain it. And then within a band dynamic, it's kind of the other way too. Like, you got to look at your guys and be like, Hey, I'm not leaving you. This is a baby. We're still together. I mean, it sounds funny, but you guys know a band is very sort of like a marriage, you know, it is very deep and interlocked. And so I think communicating and just being flexible and not being not being too phased by change and being like, hey, you know, this is going to evolve a little bit, and just trying to adjust as you go. I mean, and it does not at all mean having family is the truth is, you know, I grew up with family on the road, so I already had a weird kind of inverse version of that.
Totally.
You know, I mean, band members and toddlers, very similar behaviors. You know? They throw up on things, you know, they don't do what they're told.
It's just another one of those things, you know. Once we aren't 18 anymore and we're 30, it's like, that was a new thing of how to adapt and like a level of comfort that some people want versus others that are just fine with absolutely anything, or you know, and then having kids and getting married and buying houses. And it's just this thing that you can't really teach, and you just have to figure it out.
For sure. It is. And I would say the thing that's always kept me sane is just being really proud of the work and proud of, and so on the family side, it's keeping in touch and communicating with your, you know, life, you know, cohort, you know, your wife or your husband or your spouse, you know, and saying like, hey, we're in this together. You know, this is going to get, it's going to get weird at time, but we're in this together. And I think that's really the only like hard and fast, that works through everything else, because there's essentially no way to predict what stresses and strains are going to come when half of your job is leaving.
Yeah. And
the other half of your job is mentally and emotionally leaving. It's, you know, yeah. It's, I'm in the other room, but I'm gone.
Yeah. Do you guys all, you guys are all still in Oklahoma or?
Yeah, we are. I mean, we've never, it's kind of funny. Like we lived in LA, we've lived in New York, but we've never really uprooted here. And really since 2007, 2008, we really made a more, even more kind of strong statement about being in Tulsa and building our office and our studio and really sort of doubling down on that sense of a home base. And
yeah.
So yeah, but we're all here.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, that happened to us for like, there was talks in maybe 2009 of a couple of us were like, hey, we should go to LA. And as soon as that kind of became a thought, it was like, well, we'll just be some small fish in a massive pond there. Or it's like, yeah, if we just stay in Phoenix, like we can build something our own here, which
yeah,
kind of led on to the way we, you know, kept doing the band. And I think if we would have split up and done it like that, who knows if we still be a band.
Yeah, it's really tricky. I mean, this is such an unknown when you think about location and proximity. I think there's lots of ways it can happen. Mm-hmm. But it is, if you're not able to kind of get in the same room and collaborate, it does seem like that's an inevitability that it's, you know,
yeah,
kind of, it's hard to keep it alive. It's like a long distance romance, you know?
Yeah.
That's weird.
But yeah, so you guys do the beer festival, right?
Yeah, the Hop Jam.
Hop Jam. Yeah, so you guys do that every year, every other year?
We don't play it every year, but we have played it pretty much every other year. We just had to call off this year's event because of this insanity with COVID-19 and all the virus stuff. It happens middle of next month, but it was like, wait, there's no way we can bring people from all over the world to Tulsa.
Yeah.
All this is happening. So yeah, it would have been our seventh year this year, to do it. And we play every other year and, or so, pretty much just whenever it seems natural, to do it. And then we've had tons of amazing bands, play the festival. My brain's going to forget a lot, but, Robert Randolph, Butch Walker, Edward Sharp, Polyphonic Spree, Black Joe Lewis, I mean, so many different really, really great artists. And then it's a craft beer festival, because we started a little craft beer thing several years ago. And it's a big party. It's
pretty fun. Awesome. There's something so amazing about having your audience all be able to come into one location on a day, and it's your hometown, and yeah, they get to hear about places you sing about in songs and go and see it and meet these people that they've met on the internet because of your band. And we started in, what, 2016? 8123 Fest. 8123 is like our record label, or our, whatever you want to call it, but
our everything, yeah, thing.
Your mother's,
we kind of began the exact same thing, and like we've talked about, you know, it's like, well, if we did it in New Jersey, you know, we could probably do two times the amount of people or something, just because of the proximity of, you know, of people. But there's just something about being in Phoenix, being in our hometown, and people coming from Brazil or coming from Amsterdam or from San Diego, that it's just really kind of changed. I mean, we've always had a really tight relationship with our fans, but it's just like taking it to this other level where I feel like our fans come there to hang out with each other, and us, we just happen to be to be playing a show. So how did the idea kind of begin for you guys with that?
Well, I mean, it's sort of twofold. I mean, there the fan gathering itself, we do a deal that we, that's just called Hanson Day, and it started because it was one of those honorary, like, where you get like a decree, like an, if you've ever had a, you know, the governors and mayors can be like, we honor this day in honor of this person. And so they back, you know, fairly, you know, early on and things kind of breaking out, we got a like, hey, this is Hanson Day, kind of a honorary thing. And fans, began to just celebrate it like a birthday, like, oh, it's Hanson Day, you know, so it was, no, was a, not meant to be an actual reoccurring event, but fans would just do it and they'd connect and they'd celebrate and they'd share merch or they'd share music and they'd powwow. And we had a, you know, the fan club community happening already, the online community, but we essentially through over several years, we just said, you know, this is happening. People are already kind of powwowing and meeting up and connecting. So, when we began doing some more special events just for that community, recording special events, you know, allowing people to come to a session or come to a special, you know, a video filming or a special concert, we just said, let's just make it more of a consistent deal. And let's essentially build on what the community's doing, you know, like you, exactly what you guys are describing. There's that relationship. And it started small. It started with a couple, you know, just come on this day and we'll watch a special show and we'll take some questions. And then that's, for us, it's kind of blossomed into this little mini, almost think of it as like a, and it sounds like very similar to what you guys are describing it culturally. It's almost like your own little Comic-Con for, you know, for the fans,
totally.
You know, where they're hanging out, they're connecting, they're sharing, they're, you know, and we invite people to the neighborhood, you know, and, it's a few different shows, you know, it's actually now a few days and the, you know, fans will play a bowling tournament against each other and we'll do a dance party and I'll DJ and we'll do like special talks where we'll share songs and, you know, essentially just building on the fact that people have a common thread and they're connecting with each other. And the beer festival is sort of its own, you know, its own beast, but very much came out of, hey, look at all these people. We're doing craft beer. We're doing community. Let's, you know, do the festival, this idea of a music and beer festival, you know, on top of this weekend, because we already have this big community coming together. And so that became, you know, in addition to, you know, this groundswell of people gathering, you know, and coming to Tulsa. And so we got to hit more local, non super Hanson fans, that people that want to hang out and see craft beer and also tap into, you know, something that all of us, I say all of us, many of us around, you know, in our generation are, you know, getting into craft beer and love that whole culture and that scene. And talk about fan bases, man.
Yeah.
I mean, craft beer fans are like comparison to bands and beer
hardcore, yeah.
Brewery. It's like, you know, it's as if it's so the cultural relationship to the way craft beer fans are with bands is so similar. They have their fan bases and they have their, you know, so it just, those two things go so well together. And so, yeah, that's just, they're both an extension, and they feed off each other. And, Hop Jam has its own subculture, and it, you know, we think of it as, you know, hey, this is just, you know, this is its own thing and Hanson Day is its own thing, but they thread together directly because of who we are and because, you know, just of the complementary nature of those communities. So,
cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
You need to get some craft beer.
Yeah.
If I had a little bit more advanced notice, I get you guys some. So
that's awesome. Well, yeah, it's just so cool to like hear a bunch of these things that we've been doing kind of echoed back. It's cool to see that, you know, I mean, I've known, you know, what you guys are doing and I've heard from, you know, the Rock to the Moon guys and things, or our buddy, Ray Jeffrey, who I know used to work with you guys for a while, but just like, they always have, you know, I've said just like, you know, you guys are kind of out there doing the same things in these little different pockets of the country. So
yeah, awesome.
It's cool to hear that. And I think, it's just awesome to know that, you know, you guys are now another 10, 15 years, ahead of us, and it's still happening, and you're still enjoying making albums, and I think that's a big inspiration. So it's awesome.
Well, it's, I mean, yeah, I love hearing what you guys are about, and for everybody that listens, you know, I think especially artists, the future is bright. I mean, it's how creative do you want to be? You know, I mean, how driven do you want to be, and not to be discouraged by things, dynamics changing and the world changing around you, but to keep being creative. And as long as you are, and like you guys are clearly being your podcast, you know, your fan community, having people come together, and that I feel like that's unstoppable. And really that's what it comes back to, you know, I mean, is just being, continuing to be interested in the next thing, the future.
Totally. Well, thank you so much, man. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks. Absolutely. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah. Really, it was awesome. It. Even in the quarantine.
Yeah, exactly. In our, absolutely. You know, like we said, you got to keep being creative. So here we are.
Yeah.